Coming up next on This Week in Computer Hardware, Intel's tiny Ivy Bridge boxes of goodness, GeForce GTX 650 buy versus build, laptops with missing SATA drives, the search for a perfect benchmark, and Borderlands 2. All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 187, recorded September 20th, 2012. Maybe we can shoot the router. Welcome to Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware. I'm Patrick Norton, and this is the show where we try to tell you the most important and exciting news in computer hardware so you can make the right decisions when you're building your PC, working on your Mac, or taking a look at your next tablet. Joining me as always, Mr. Ryan Schrout, who looks to be back at home. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. I am at home. We had a snarky email conversation back and forth with Burke when I said, luckily, I am not in studio. And I meant, I'm glad to be home. I'm glad to not be out of town anymore. Not that I didn't want to hang out with you and Burke in studio, but I like to hang out at my house sometimes, too. Doesn't happen as often as I would like.
Yeah. Well, you know, we are several thousands of miles from the location of the woman you love and married, so I would hope you would want to actually go home once in a while. Borderlands 2, not necessarily the most stressful game on a PC. It's the Unreal Engine, right? But you said 1080p best settings, GTX 660 or Radeon HD 7870. That would be your baseline for the best gaming experience graphics-wise.
Yeah, we played we actually had We did an event with NVIDIA yesterday where we played Borderlands on a live stream for about 4.5 hours.
I watched some of that.
I was actually using a 660 Ti at the beginning of that, but earlier in the day, I had been using just a base, one of the brand new GTX 660s that we talked about last week. And running at 1080p with everything turned up all the way, including physics on high, was more than acceptable. There are a couple of cases where we saw frame rates dip down into the low 30s, maybe into the 20s when there was a lot of stuff going on. So that's why we actually went ahead and upgraded to a 660 Ti when we did the live stream. So, but, you know, it's not the most demanding game. It has a very unique art style. If you've never played any of the border, either the first one or this new one, it has kind of like a cel-shaded, almost kind of like a comic book cartoon type of look to it. But it's really cool. It's not childish looking. It's definitely an M-rated game. But it's a whole lot of fun. And it's interesting to see. We're going to have, we're working on a benchmarking method for it here. Maybe we'll have it tomorrow and we'll be able to run some cards through it. The big thing that NVIDIA is pushing with it is physics integration. And I know physics has a lot of negative connotation with it, which it's deserved. A lot of it is deserved. One of the things that's interesting is, you know, they basically all they did was work with Gearbox, the developer of Borderlands 2, and make sure that like fluids work a little bit differently. There's a lot more particle effects. The cloth is actually interactive as opposed to just static animations and that kind of stuff. And it's, you don't need any of it. You can still play the game without it, but it works pretty well. And it does add something to it.
I like what one of the reviewers at Kotaku was basically like, I'm just running around so I can watch myself run through puddles and shooting tarps. And it's like, until EA has its first tarp shooting title, Borderlands 2 is it. But you laugh, right? But this is finally the first time I've looked at something and been like, wow, physics is cool. I want a card with physics just so I can play Borderlands and have all the really cool effects. And it's like, this is neat.
That's the
congratulations,
point.
NVIDIA.
Yeah, I mean, that's the goal, right? And there's some crap that goes along with it. Like, could you integrate this on AMD cards? Maybe. Is NVIDIA going to spend money and development time on it? Absolutely not. That's not in their best interest.
Right.
As many times as companies say that they're out for the interest of the gamer, it's always the gamer and themselves, right? So you can enable, you actually can't disable physics. It's either low, medium, or high.
Right.
And I actually got a pretty good explanation of it when we did the stream yesterday from one of the NVIDIA reps who said low is essentially the setting that you get when you play Borderlands on a console. So that's the same amount of physics simulation you'll get like on a console. When you enable medium, it actually enables the GPU accelerated physics. You get particles and cloth and that kind of stuff. And when you go to high, it actually just increases the amount of those items. So you can play around with those settings and find a good balance. But it's a really fun game. Like I said, if you really, really want to watch 4.5 hours of us BSing and playing the game, we posted that video on YouTube. And how big was that video, Ken? Like when we first got it off, it was like 6 gig video that we uploaded to YouTube for not really useful purposes, but it's there.
Yeah, and we should point out caffeine-free Dave says in the chat room, but that's one of the reasons I stopped PC gaming, couldn't afford updating the PC with every other new game. And the reality is you probably don't have to upgrade anything inside your system to run this. It has fairly low barrier of entry. You only have to upgrade. And the truth is right now is a great time for PC gaming because you get so much performance for so little money in terms of GPUs, and most people are using 1080p screens, and 1080p screens are not taxing even the medium cards that are out there. The only time you really need like a $600 card is if you're using one of the higher res monitors or doing multiple monitor gaming. Yeah. We should probably skip right to what to me is the most exciting story today, because everybody knows I'm cheap. GeForce GTX 650, $109 for Kepler GPU goodness. Is it worth buying, sir?
Probably not.
that was harsh.
We have it. I mean, it's so. Here's my issue: the 660 Ti is based on GK104, same part as 670 and 680. The 660 vanilla, just the plain 660, is based on GK106. It has 960 stream processors, I think. The GTX 650 is actually based on GK107, I believe. Or a cut-down version of 106. But the point of it is, it drops from 960 cores to 384 cores. So it's a dramatic drop in performance. You also go from 192-bit to 128-bit memory bus, and you go from 2 gigs to 1 gig of frame buffer. Look at the price gap there. You're going from $109 for the 650 to $229 for the 660. That's a pretty wide gap, and you're going to see that type of performance gap as well as, you know, the pricing gap. It'll be a good upgrade for people that have integrated graphics and don't want to spend a lot of money. That's what it's going to be for. I haven't gotten my hands on to test with it yet. It's got to be better than that awful GT 640 that is also a GK107 part. I don't know how much better it will be. I'm guessing, you know, I assume NVIDIA is a pretty smart company, and they're going to price things according to the performance levels. So I assume the GTX 650 is going to perform significantly closer to the GT 640 than it is the GTX 660. Hmm. So for a gamer, somebody who's interested in Borderlands 2, even if you're not interested in playing it on maximum settings, I would still say, don't buy the 650 unless you have these extreme cost restrictions. If you can afford to get up to a 660 or on the AMD side, like a 7850 or 7870, that's where you're going to see, you know, what I would consider the mainstream gaming cards as opposed to entry level gaming cards. I don't know. And I'm not super excited about it. I haven't been really eager to I haven't been knocking down doors to get a review sample of this, just because, you know, in their own benchmarks, they're comparing it to the GTS 450, and they are saying it's only 20% faster. So if they are saying it's only 20% faster, it's probably a little bit less than that. and the GTS 450 is just not a card that really gets, you know, the type of people really that listen to our show or watch our show generally really excited.
Keep saving your pennies, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Go that extra month.
Tim Vary on PC Perspective, AMD binning Trinity APUs with defective GPUs as CPU-only Athlon processors. Is there a problem with that? Doesn't particularly bother me.
No, I don't see a problem with it. I mean, they're pretty upfront about what it is. I like the continuation of the Athlon brand because that was one of the kind of defining characteristics of what made AMD so popular back when the first Athlons were released. It's a smart move. You've got these pieces of silicon where the GPU part is not working correctly, can't run at the speeds of any part that you've advertised and are selling, let's just disable the whole thing and sell it as a really low-cost CPU. So you get like the Athlon X4 730, 740, or 750, you know, all the way up to 2.8, 3.2, or 3.4 gigahertz. Now, they're not super fast processors, and they don't have integrated graphics. So where does this put it in the market? It's kind of a tentative area. Pricing is going to have to be really aggressive to make these interesting, because you still need... So what's interesting about this product is you would have to have an A75 motherboard or below, something like that, this processor, but then you also have to have a discrete graphics card, right? Because you can't... You don't have integrated graphics. Like, in my opinion, the success of Llano and Trinity that it has had is because, okay, I got one chip and it's got CPU and GPU on it, and it's a better GPU than what I can get on Intel's integrated parts. With this, you do not get that integrated GPU. So, you know, it's a lot less attractive to anybody thinking down that target, especially considering now, even to get basic graphics support, you're going to have to get a discrete card.
Right.
So, I don't think it lists, I don't think Tim had pricing on this yet. I know they did this similarly with the Llano parts, mm-hmm. And they weren't, in my opinion, priced aggressively enough to be beneficial to the market. Right. Like, if these were $60 parts, that would be great. You know, maybe it's about half the price because you're getting half of the, you know, half the transistors working, essentially. But I don't think they're going to be down that low. But we'll see relatively soon as Trinity starts to leak out on the desktop side.
Yeah, AMD is in a tough position to do CPUs only.
Yeah,
because just thinking of. Moving on, small form factor Intel Nook, next unit of computing is what they're calling it, the Nook PC, or Nook, coming in sure. October for under $400, unfortunately named, but I think actually really cool. So it's a really tiny motherboard, 4 inches by 4 inches. So Mini ITX 6x7 by 6x7. Again, this is another Tim Vary article up on PCPer.com. VIA's Pico ITX form factor boards measure 3.9 by 2.7. So the Nook is not the smallest PC you can build, but it will be the fastest and by, quote, a significant margin thanks to the bundled Ivy Bridge CPU, unquote. So what we have here is essentially a desktop ready PC or a home theater ready PC. It's a small 4x4-inch box or board you can integrate into a box. You can attach to a home theater. You can use a desktop computer. I have visions of using it as a server device, at least if, oh, there it is. If you scroll down a little bit, you see on the back of the picture up on PCPer.com, USB, which I would hope would be USB 3.0 when it ships, HDMI, and what looks to be, yes, ladies and gentlemen, a Thunderbolt port. If we mm-hmm. slide up just a little bit, oh, you can see it right there. HDMI, and then the Thunderbolt, and then the dual HDMI and Ethernet. So could be a really interesting server box. With the Ethernet, I would like Ethernet and Thunderbolt so I can make a server box with
right.
epically fast external storage. Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to watch this evolve. So two SODIMM slots for RAM, M.SOTA port for an SSD, mini PCI Express slot for a Wi-Fi card, and basically one motherboard is going to have three USB 2.0 ports, one HDMI output, and one Thunderbolt port. So obviously they have not consulted with me to find the board that I want. The other board will have a three USB 2.0 ports, two HDMI outputs, and one gigabit Ethernet jack. Intel believes that the Thunderbolt-equipped model will be more popular with consumers, while the gigabit Ethernet and dual HDMI model will be used more by businesses.
I think the limitation you're running into here is more on space on the PCB right. to both have... a gigabit controller and then try to also fit a Thunderbolt controller on there. Thunderbolt controllers are not integrated into anything. I imagine
right.
just in physical spacing is where you have that issue, not really in like, you know, back panel spacing or anything like that. So, but it's interesting, you know, it's kind of, I won't say it's an attack on Raspberry Pi, but it's right. going after the same idea of Raspberry Pi.
Well,
is that.
With one massive, important, distinctive difference, this is a $400 board, box, chassis thing, right? And you know, you're talking yeah. about a significant performance improvement. Raspberry Pi is selling for $35, you know, but the performance difference is vast. It's only an order of magnitude larger. Yeah, Intel i3, 3270. Well, it's about, I think it looks like it'd be about twice the size, but, you know, Core i3, 3717U CPU, 4 gigs of RAM, Wi-Fi card, 40 gigabyte Intel SSD, Okay, so it would be like $400 with 4 gigabytes of RAM, the Wi-Fi card,
right,
and an Intel SSD. That's pretty cool. That's a
pretty powerful system. If you compare that to the performance you get out of a Raspberry Pi, it's not even close.
Yeah.
Ken did just bring me this just to say, hey, if you got that Thunderbolt port, here's a Thunderbolt to gigabit Ethernet adapter that Apple sells, right? So you can you still have that option there.
Well, that means you're going to have to chain it. As long as your external drive enclosure has 2 Thunderbolt ports.
Correct.
Because you have 1 Thunderbolt port and 1 Ethernet adapter means no more devices. So
it's not a guarantee. You just got to pick the right parts.
I know. And that's why you should be listening to us here on Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, which, by the way, if this is your first This Week in Computer Hardware experience, twit.tv/Twitch, T-W-I-C-H, is the place to find all of our podcasts, to subscribe, or you can search for it on iTunes or your favorite podcatcher. And if you want to email us, we answer questions later in the show. Twitch@twit.tv is the email address. And I'll say that one more time, twich@twit.tv. So kind of strange. OCZ has exploded in the past few years, and kind of, to me, out of nowhere, the CEO's gone. What's the story?
Nobody knows for sure. You know, it's one of those things where, the CEO is resigning or whatever, but the general consensus is that it was more of a push out by the board of directors. You know, OCZ as a company has survived so many different transitions in the industry. They went from being, you know, they've done memory, they've done video cards, they do power supplies, they've done CPU coolers. I mean, you name it, and chances are they have been involved in it in some way or the other. And in the last couple of years, they've really doubled down on SSDs. You know, what the CEO leaving actually means is it's hard to tell. Some people might have guessed, well, you know what, they're changing. They're unhappy with the direction that OCZ that they've gone with the SSD markets. And I don't think that's really the case. I think there's one possibility that the board of directors really wants to kind of get away from the consumer side of solid state and go strictly into enterprise. And they didn't want to do that. Or it was the other way around, where the Ryan Peterson, who was the CEO, really wanted to push strongly into enterprise. And they said, you know what, this is a losing battle for us. Maybe we want to go back and really focus on the consumer side. You know, I think we'll be able to tell in the next 6 months which direction they actually go in through all of this. But, you know, we had some questions about it. And will this affect warrant? The company's not shutting down or anything like that. They're still... you know, still a solid company on good footing and everything like that. There were rumors we talked about Seagate. I think you have Seagate that maybe wanted to acquire OCZ. Obviously, that didn't happen, and maybe they were blaming the CEO for that. So they wanted him out to get somebody in that maybe would prep the company for acquisition in a little bit more efficient manner. I don't know. There was a lot there, but I know it was making the rounds in the news in the hardware world. So I wanted to make sure we kind of addressed it and said, if you're buying OCZ SSDs, it's really not a big deal. Right. Just you can still do that.
It's still safe.
Yeah.
AMD Sea Islands HD 8850 and 8870 specs leaks. Again, Tim Vary up in PCPer.com. Quote, AMD beat NVIDIA to the punch with its 7000 series Southern Islands graphics cards. And if the rumors hold true, the company may well accomplish the same feat with its next generation architecture. Codenamed Sea Islands, the architecture of AMD's 8800 series is set to allegedly debut around January 2013. DX11, GPGPU, power efficiency improvements, 3.4 billion transistors on a 28 nanometer process, and a rumored sub-$300 price. What will the performance? Well, I mean, it's kind of it's going to be interesting. You're talking about like another 600 million chips over the Pitcairn, the HD 7870,
right?
20% here it is, 20% more, 21% more processors, 27% larger die size, 5% higher base clock, and they're claiming a 75% improvement in computing performance.
Right, that's kind of the big one.
That's, you know, huge.
They're adding 30% more. Well, they're adding, I don't know, let's say 20 to 30% more transistors. They're going from 2.8 to 3.4, which puts it right in line with what Kepler is today. But they're getting a 75% increase in performance. with only a 5% increase in clock speed, right? So that gives you an idea of where you're at in terms of shader counts. And we also kind of, we can guess, because I think there's a line in here that they're increasing it to 1,792 shaders. And I believe, does it have 1,500 on Tahiti? I believe it does. So we're not seeing a huge increase in shader count, which means they're probably going to pretty significantly change the architecture of each individual shader inside the GPU as well. You know, it's all kind of guessing at this point. But a 75% increase in single precision computing powers is very significant, considering you're using 9% less power and, according to the rumors, 20% lower cost out of the gate, right? So $279 is the rumored launch price, whereas the 7870 launched at $349. Now, today it's at like $259, but it launched at $349. So, you know, a little bit of a tidbit and rumor about Sea Islands, which we knew was going to be the next generation architecture. But, you know, in terms of time frames, I think you're looking at March at the earliest type right. thing for this. Don't put off buying a graphics card thinking you're going to wait for a Sea Islands part just because you see some of these rumors, which is normally the question we get the week after stories like this.
The week after stories.
Yeah.
Just sounds so raw. Should we talk about Intel's latest YDI, or should we take a moment and move forward to our viewer questions, Mr. Schreier?
We can go ahead. We can move on. That's cool. I'll just real quickly say, YDI 3.5, much lower latency.
This is good.
I haven't tested it yet, but there's a possibility you may be able to actually, I don't think it's fast enough for gaming. Maybe able to use it as like a secondary monitor with mouse and keyboard and not notice any lag, right? Which would be really cool.
If you're not familiar with Intel's YDI, it's Intel's wireless display technology. It's generally right. bundled with notebooks. You get an external adapter to connect one of the HDMI ports onto your HDTV and allows you to go from your notebook to your HDTV. The latency issue that Mr. Trout mentioned is because there's a big hang time. It goes right. from the computer to the YDI, to the YDI, to the HDTV, and it's not really fast enough for gaming. Fine if you're watching movies. Not so good if you're playing Twitch games. So are they talking about, they're claiming a 10x reduction in latency?
Reduction
in latency.
I think we're talking about sub 50 milliseconds now.
Wow. That's pretty high.
It's pretty good. It's not good enough for like high speed gaming because sure. that's like an entire additional trip to a server and back for a lot of people. But it could be enough for really kind of basic gaming and just normal use case right. productivity stuff.
So it's cool. The YDI, in case you aren't familiar with it, does support existing Intel YDI features, include full HD, HD CP2, DVD, Blu-ray 5.1 surround sound. So it has come a long way since the initial releases of YDI.
Indeed.
All right. Chad. Email question we've been waiting a couple weeks to answer. I apologize for taking so long, Chad. He says, I'm thinking of upgrading with laptop by replacing the two 225 gigabyte drives that came installed with a 120 gigabyte SSD for the operating system and some Steam games, and the second drive would be a 2.5 inch 1 terabyte hard disk drive. I don't want that many programs on it, but most of the time the default file path always prefers the C drive. With a growing trend to have the SSD as the boot and a larger storage drive, will operating systems start making default save paths to the storage drive to not wear out the SSD, or does the save path have to stay as a C drive since there should, in theory, always be a C drive? Oh, boy. The first thought is stop worrying about wearing out your SSDs. Stop.
Yeah.
Stop worrying about wearing out your SSD. I think the bigger issue is whether or not you will run out of space on your SSD. Because I've run into people who are like, they have their SSD, they have Photoshop in their SSD, and all of a sudden after like 7 photo shoots, they're like, I'm out of space. Well, duh, you've got the 120 gigabyte hard drive and you've got, you know, 80 yep. gigabytes of photos on it. What would you recommend in this situation, Mr. Schrapp?
I mean, you want to have the SSD as your boot drive. Right. I think it makes sense to have the 225 gig just kind of extra on the side. You may consider saving a little bit more money, getting one of the 240 gig SSDs if you're kind of worried about it. You know, like, for example, if you're doing gaming, Steam kind of has, I think it's still in beta, a feature that will now let you install games to a non-primary drive. Used to be that it only went into /program/file/steam.
Right.
But now you can specify separate folders. That would definitely help. You could point it to that other drive. I tend to be more on the side of have your SSD and just use it exclusively, except when you have really long-term storage goals. If you have a bunch of movies and music, put that on the other drive. It doesn't need to have super high or super low latency, rather. It doesn't even have super high transfer speeds. But you just want to have access to it. For your games, you want to get the benefit of that solid-state drive. You want it to start a little bit faster. You want it to load a little bit faster. I think that would be for a machine that has two 225-gig traditional hard drives. Oh, I'm sorry. You'd see a pretty big performance gain by moving to a SSD plus other drive. And I don't think you need to worry about, I don't know. Look at your current hardware. To me, for my laptop, it's not my primary machine. So 120 gigs lasts me a long time for what I do on a laptop. But that's because I do a lot of my work on a desktop machine. If you only have a laptop, that's right, probably going to be an issue. You're going to have to manage it a little bit more. But that's the world we live in when solid state's still a little bit on the high price side.
First world problem.
It still is. Yeah, exactly. And my hard drives are too fast, but too small as well.
Rumors in the chat room is that the Steam feature allows you to assign it to another drive actually is a full version, not a beta. Has anyone experienced SSD RAMs? Alframe, I have. And it's, it may be faster than a single drive, but it's impossible to tell because a single SSD is already so much faster than a, it may be possible to benchmark, but in terms of me using a computer, the SSD, a single SSD is so fast, RAID SSD, I guess, if I was saving multi-terabyte files, I would probably notice the difference, but I can't afford a multi-terabyte RAID.
Yeah, RAID SSDs don't make any sense to me, really, unless you're doing super high speed reads or writes, maybe. I would much rather have one 240 gig SSD than two 120 gigs. And in terms of cost wise, they should be the same either way. That's just me. I mean, SSDs are at the point now where even the most cost efficient SSDs are going to be saturating the SATA 6 bus, or in this case, he's probably got a machine that has SATA 3 in it. So that wouldn't make much sense.
You don't want to mirror them.
RAID one on. That makes sense. If you're going to do that, then yeah, you can do a mirror. I support that wholly. Backups, drive redundancies, all that kind of stuff. I meant RAID 0. It doesn't make any sense to do RAID 0 for SSDs, in my opinion. If you do RAID 1, it's hard to get past that mental block of paying twice as much per gig.
Well,
I think for a lot of people.
You could also do the RAID 0 because you want to stripe and create an artificially larger RAID drive. But yeah, that was one of the stranger things about the Acer S5. Like that notebook, the little motorized door scares me. The RAID on the SSDs just puzzled me. Nice light notebook, though. Fast.
Yep.
Doug says, my Toshiba satellite laptop powers on to BIOS setup. It lists the hard drive and optical disk drive as none. I tried the load setup defaults. It didn't help. Any suggestions? Yes. One of the biggest, I used to have a computer that would do this until I shoved a little tiny bit of matchbook cover in between the end of the hard drive and the external of the enclosure because it was, for some reason, the PCI connector on it.
SATA.
Thank you. No, before SATA.
IDE. Oof.
That's the one. It's been so long. how we forget our old interfaces. For some reason, the IDE connectors were loose, and for some reason, wedging a piece of paper in there actually wedged the hard drive to the point where it would actually operate. 2 years later, it was still operating.
I did that exact same thing with an SSD in one of my first Lenovo X201s. It was a replacement SSD, so it didn't have the correct mounting things on it, so it was a little bit loose. So I shoved a folded piece of paper up a bunch of times and wedged it in there, and then shut the door on it.
So obviously, Ryan and I both want you to figure out where your hard drive is inside of your notebook, Doug, and basically pull it out, reboot it, shut it down, unplug it, put it back in,
yeah,
you know, wedge it in place if necessary, you know, and see if it boots. Generally speaking, there's one of two things going on. Either your SATA drive is dead. Well, one of multiple things going on. Either your SATA drive is dead, either your connection to your SATA drive is having issues, or for some reason the entire sort of SATA portion of your motherboard has taken ill. And then, because it bothers me, if your hard drive and your optical disk drive are both MIA in the BIOS, that may mean, you know, is there possibly, you know, a BIOS for some reason, like, you know, did you do a firmware upgrade in your BIOS maybe for the wrong?
It doesn't sound like he did. I would lean towards if it's a SATA connection or maybe an IDE connection, didn't mention how old the machine was, that it may be that connection to the motherboard has become disconnected or loose or broken. The fact that both of them are gone. I'm assuming he has both a hard drive and an optical disk and neither of them show up. If it's a standard SATA drive, you can always take it out of a laptop and try to hook it up to another machine and make sure that it still sees the drive. You don't have to boot off of it. Just put it down as a secondary drive. And then you know that the problem doesn't lie with that, which is a plus, I guess. So, if you've got cables you can wiggle around, this is the time to try it.
Yeah, that's always a painful moment. It's so bad when... It's so bad when notebooks die because there's so little you can do. You know, if your drive dies, okay, you can swap it another drive. But if your drive dies and you don't have access to a spare drive, then you have to buy a spare drive so you can try to get it to recognize a spare drive. And then if it doesn't work, you end up owning a new notebook and your dead notebook and the spare drive, and you buy a 2.5-inch enclosure for it because you probably can't return it once you've opened the plastic. Oh. Correct. See if you've got a buddy with a 2.5-inch drive you can borrow. Mark, should we do Mark's question next before I get all sad about the SATA problems?
Yes, let's do.
Mark says, hi, Patrick and Ryan. Viewer here since the screensaver days on Tech TV. Good seeing you transition so well. Thank you, Mark. It's good to still be seen. He says, I'm curious about AMD and Intel APU developments. So far, I've only heard you guys contrast the new Intel effort against their older effort, saying there is a great improvement. But how does Intel's new architecture compare to AMD's old architecture, Llano, and their new, if possible? It's faster. Also, for Ryan, it would be nice to have a more real-world subjective comparisons between chips as well as those very targeted benchmarks. For example, I had both an i7 Sandy Bridge and an FX8150 system. I couldn't tell any difference at all gaming with the same video card and comparable components. Am I insane? As for doing virtualization on them, the AMD system was much smoother under loads, while the Intel one got oddly choppy. However, browser performance on the Intel chip with flash running was more fluid than the AMD. I know this kind of information is more difficult to present, but it seems far more relevant than benchmarks that often don't have much to do with normal experience. I'm not biased for or against a brand name, but I am price performance conscious. A user's experience will be largely affected by what tasks they routinely perform, not what a benchmark result is. I would really love to hear subjective reviews too, like a Car and Driver magazine review. First of all, I will say actually that PC Per and the other hardware websites do subjective testing along with their objective testing. The issue is there are 32,000 user experiences, and you've heard us talk to Workstation. We've had people ask us, like, hey, I'm going to be doing gigantic CAD CAM work. Like, I piece together offshore oil rigs, and I have to have discrete entries for 32,000 parts and 3,200 different kinds of steel and 37,000 different types of plastic and tubing and copper. And you think I'm being ridiculous, but there's these amazing CAD CAM rigs where basically they design entire skyscrapers inside of a single application. And if they change the spec for a screw from this screw to that screw, it will instantaneously change that across every single instance of that screw in the skyscraper or the offshore oil rig. Or if they change the price, it will automatically calculate how it changes the price. Or, you know what I mean? And it's incredibly complicated and incredibly amazing. And it's also like, you know, there's maybe a few thousand people doing this, or a few, there's tens of thousands of people doing this. Games, right, which are the primary reason people buy new graphics cards, that's how you benchmark graphics cards. Games also make a really good metric for the comparison of the performance of the processor itself. Because, you know, a huge percentage of the people that are using computers, they browse the web, they use the Facebook, they've got the email, they do the checking. You know, they added a photo here and there, you know what I mean? And, you know, half the people, three-quarter of the people using computers don't really, you know, Bejeweled love it. Not a big challenger of your CPU or your GPU. It's when you start getting into audio editing, video editing, you know, CAD cam, 3D rendering, and as things get more complicated, yeah, then all of a sudden your CPU and your GPU get really important. The problem is trying to figure out every subset of that. I love how you mentioned, like, virtualization, the AMD systems was much smoother under loads while the Intel one got oddly choppy. Did both systems have the same amount of memory? Were you using the same applications? Were you using the same, you know, installed application on that? Did you have the same firmware updates? Were the, you know, firmware and BIOS updates for the chipsets and all the subcomponents in there? Did you have comparable hard drives on both? And when you start doing cross-platform comparisons, you know, it used to be 1,000 years ago, and I know Ryan's run into this, like, chip company B would send you a system and it would have like $7,000 worth of components. They'd be like, test our system and see how fast it is. And I had a really, really nice guy who was a really serious marketing guy go ballistic on me because I took literally $6,000 worth of hardware outside of his computer and put in a normal hard drive, you know, in a normal amount of RAM, and then benchmarked it apples to apples against the competitor. And he's like, why did you do that? And I'm like, because there's like eight people who are going to buy a $6,000 worth of hardware to go in $1,000 worth of, you know, CPU and memory. And he's like, you know what I mean? So, but what they wanted to do was to catch you going like, wow, Team Z's CPU is amazingly fast, because you were supposed to be too stupid to recognize that they had thousands of dollars worth of hard drives and other accessories in there. It's really hard to do comparisons that are meaningful to everyone who's going to read the article.
I can't say anything more than that. That is exactly the case, right? The reason we have to use these objective tests as opposed to subjective ones is because they are repeatable, and right, we know the input and output. And that's something we do some subjective stuff, but a lot of times what we'll see is we'll get the opposite of what Mark is saying here. Well, they'll take the objective stuff and say that it's biased, or that there's no numbers behind it, so it doesn't mean anything. Just because it feels different to you doesn't mean it actually had. It could be a placebo effect. It could be all kinds of things that are adjusting it, right? So we try to find a balance, especially if you look at our graphics card reviews. We have numbers and we have subjective stuff as well in that. So we try to do both cases. You know, we'll keep that in mind, Mark, going forward and that kind of stuff. But it is very hard to cover all aspects that everybody wants to see. If you have specific requests, absolutely email them. Like if you say, hey, I'm using this virtualization software with Windows 7 and this hardware, and you have these two things back and forth, I'd really like to see how this performs under this. Send me an email. I mean, I can't guarantee we'll look at everything, but you know, if it's interesting, we'll definitely do that. We have processor releases coming up very soon, so it's time to start looking at that stuff again.
I want you to open up 100 windows in Firefox, another 20 windows in Chrome, have at least 3 YouTube video streams playing simultaneously while running 2 virtual machines coding software.
Okay.
Man, that's the benchmark.
Yeah, it is a benchmark, yes.
You know, if Ryan could reach out through the internet and smack me right now, my head would be going,
The question is, who is that a use case for? Is it a worst case? Yes. Right. What is it a use case for? And that's the type of thing that it's kind of hard to nail down.
Several hundred programmers in the United States.
Right. Well, when multi-core, multi-threading first started to become a thing, it became very popular to try to do multi-tasking testing. And it was very difficult. Like, okay, I'm going to try to encode this video while I play Doom 3 or whatever it was at the time, right? Let's see what our Doom 3 frame rates are here. And it became like a cat and mouse game trying to figure out which ones of these actually worked, which doesn't give you reliable numbers. You know, you could do that thing where you encoded 3 times and played Doom 3, and the encode would take 3 totally different amounts of time because it all depended on how the operating system and processor balanced the load in any given instance. So it's a tough, tough problem.
Benchmarking is non-trivial, and I, you know, to amplify something that Ryan just said, repeatable benchmarks, something you can do over and over again, and the results actually, you know, mean the same thing, or actually you achieve the same results multiple times, Mark, is a huge deal. And it's really, you know, and it's kind of funny. All it takes is, you know, current versions of Firefox are don't have like the memory leak issues, but it's amazing how having a single application running in the background can completely change the benchmark results on two different machines or on the same machine running multiple times. Mm-hmm. And if you don't zero everything out, you don't want to be in a situation where you blame the hardware when it's something that you overlooked. Skype was running in the background?
We had an issue here the other day. We were trying to run some benchmarks on a motherboard. Mm-hmm. And we had previously done overclocking testing on that board. And you could go back into the BIOS, and we thought we had set everything. As far as I could tell, we had set everything back to its default status. But the performance numbers we were getting were higher than they were supposed to be, higher than everybody else. We're like, oh, that's kind of weird. And finally, you figure out that, well, the CPU is running at its maximum frequency when it's only supposed to be running at, you know, two steps of turbo boost, but it's actually running at four. Something is obviously wrong. Go to the BIOS, nothing changed anything. Suddenly, you do a clear CMOS on it. Reboot, everything works fine. And there's those types of kind of hiccups that happen in this world all the time. I don't know. We might be getting too much behind the scenes, but benchmarking is not as simple as installing a piece of hardware and running a single application. Like, there's not – I wish, trust me, it would make my life 100 times easier if I could just turn on, boot up Windows, copy some files over, and have a button that I would push, and all these numbers would come out. You know, you can kind of script some things, but – Borderlands 2, Battlefield 3, Skyrim. These are all games that you have to do manual run-throughs for. So somebody, when we test the graphics card, when we test Battlefield 3, we test 180 seconds of Battlefield 3 three times per resolution per video card. So it becomes very much not fun to play Battlefield 3 at that point because you've played the same 180 seconds of that game for about 4 hours.
I'm having bad flashbacks to most of 1995, 1996, 1997, 1998, 1999, where you get to the point where you're over the course of a year, you're watching a benchmark. You can basically be like, yeah, it's going to be yada. And it turns out just by watching the stuff flicker by at high speed, you can actually tell exactly what the final score is going to be because you've watched the benchmark 7,000 times.
Yeah.
Frank.
It's fun.
Sorry. Go ahead, Ryan.
Oh, I was just saying it's fun. It's fun. Let's move on to Frank's question. We'll get Frank's in here.
Should Frank build or buy? Thank you for producing an excellent show for techie folks that non-gamers can enjoy, too. You're welcome, Frank. We do our best. Frank's considering two options for his main machine in his photography studio. One, build a computer based on gaming specs, $1,200 to $1,500 for Photoshop, Lightroom, Premiere, etc. And that price is not including monitor, keyboard, or other input devices. Two, buy a used high-end gaming machine, e.g. Alienware or something someone built and built a new one. Is it worth the risk and money saved to buy a used gaming machine? Maybe certain parts are fried or incompatible. Is it worth the risk if there are few, or to me, if it is worth the risk, are there a few tips or software tricks to use when looking at machines? I am fairly computer illiterate with over 30 years playing with computers. Excuse me. I am fairly computer literate. I'm so sorry, Frank. I am fairly computer literate with over 30 years of playing with computers, but they always were either store-bought or upgrades that I did. You know, I'd also say, have you considered building your own machine? Not because you're going to save money, but because you'll enjoy the process. You know, oh, you did say build a computer based on gaming specs. Apparently, the late nights with the baby are starting to tell.
I think the real question is here is he's building a machine for Photoshop, Lightroom, and Premiere.
Right.
Is a gaming machine spec really the way he wants to go? I say for the most part, yes. The only place where it may not make sense, if you're going to choose the building option, you don't need a super high-end GPU, except you want to make sure you get a GPU that will do the accelerated portions of Photoshop and Premiere and that kind of stuff. So, you know, you may actually want to follow those gaming specifications pretty closely, because you're going to want to get a higher end processor. Your CPU is still going to be more important than your GPU in those applications, but the GPU can become very useful as well.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you know, Adobe has excellent information what GPU is going to work best with CS6 or CS5 or whatever you're working with. I would also say sometimes you want to really avoid, unless you particularly like the case design or something special, because a lot of times people buy a gaming machine, a pre-built gaming machine from a boutique manufacturer, and they spend a lot of money. and they want to get that money back out when they resell it. And you may be paying for really cool cables and windows in the case and a really stylish case design, when what you really want to pay for is as much memory and as much processor and an appropriate amount of GPU. Because like, you're in Photoshop, you're in Lightroom, you're in Premiere. What you want is ridiculous amounts of memory, the fastest CPU you can afford, and a ton of storage. And I don't think you really care about everything else that goes into a gaming machine. You know what I mean? Into a boutique gaming machine. Don't pay an extra $300-$400 for a really cool case, unless you're in love with the case, you know, and it makes the room. And, you know, I missed my rug. It pulled the whole room together. That Alienware case, it pulled the whole room together. You know what I mean? Like, don't spend extra money for somebody else's old gaming machine when you can get all of the performance for less money with a less stylish case or a less fantastic cable layout. That's the cheap guy in me again, who was so excited about the 650 and is no longer excited.
And then it gets shot down.
That's right. Shot down. Oh, my goodness. But, Frank, you know, I would also say, you know, the nice thing about building your own machine is you get all the parts you want. So each and every time. Just saying.
Yep. Agreed.
So, although I got to say, a Core i7, somebody's 2-year-old Core i7 system with 12 gigabytes of RAM would be really tempting right about now if they're itching to buy a new Ivy Bridge.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, buying used computers is always a little bit risky. You don't really know. It's kind of like buying a used car. You're just kind of taking a chance on what it was used for. You know, if they can... Like a used car, if they can turn it on and you can drive it, that's about as good as you're going to get. If you can boot up the PC and they can show you it working and, you know, playing a game or something like that, then that's as good as you're going to get. It all comes down to if you trust the seller, right? So would I recommend going on Craigslist? No, probably not. Would I recommend buying from a friend or somebody you know or a coworker or something like that? It's like, oh, yeah, I've got this machine that I don't really use anymore. It's got a crappy video card in it, but you could upgrade that relatively easy or something like that. Yeah. Then maybe go down that route.
Yeah. If they won't let you like run the machine and
don't buy that.
Don't buy it. Yeah. If they tell you it boots just fine, but they won't plug it into the monitor that's just sitting right there.
No, trust me. It works great.
It works fine.
Don't buy a used car from somebody who's asking you to tow it away.
Don't buy a computer in a parking lot. Unless they plug it into a monitor in the parking lot and it runs.
They got a generator, you know, whatever.
That's about it for this edition of Twitch, this week in computer hardware. Ryan, what's coming up on PC Purr this week?
We have a lot of stuff. So coming up very soon, I don't know if it'll be next week, we are going to have new processors to talk about from AMD. No surprise, it's going to be Trinity stuff. So we're going to see how those new APUs compare. Very shortly thereafter, we'll talk about the new pile driver discrete. I keep saying discrete. The non-APU. We're just about the CPUs, right? These are the ones that are going to be supposedly a little bit higher powered, maybe a little bit more of the FX brand and that kind of stuff. It'll be interesting. We're going to have to get back into the whole swing of CPU things. We've been focused on GPUs for so long, basically since Ivy Bridge was released. So booting all those machines back up and making sure that we have all the updated stuff on them is probably what's going on this week. How about Techzilla?
Robert Herron's going to be on Monday. Veronica, of course, getting married Saturday night. Going on a honeymoon, leaving me and the Techzilla audience alone. Actually, leaving me and the Techzilla audience with Robert, which should be kind of fun. We're going to be talking about Ethernet switches, like how do you pick an Ethernet switch, USB battery packs. So we've got the Eaton Ruckus, which is our solar-powered Bluetooth speaker system. Pelican's new backpack series. They've done a consumer. Apparently, it's kind of funny. I keep laughing. Pelican, the case manufacturers, decided that they didn't have a they weren't recognizable enough to consumers, so they came up with a consumer brand. We're going to talk about the new Pelican backpack. And with a little bit of luck, Wednesday we'll finally have my assessment of life with a $35 desktop PC, aka what happens when you use a Raspberry Pi for your primary work machine. So,
shout out to Kevin Lloyd, who is on Twitter, who posted a picture of him watching Twitch live on his TV.
Nice.
And my hair looks like it needs a haircut in that picture too. So I guess I'll have to do that this week.
Yeah, we both need haircuts. We're getting shaggy. That's it for Twitch.
It is.
This week in computer hardware.
Quick reminder to email us your questions, guys. Twitch TWICH at twit.tv. Make sure that there is only one T in that word. We were using twitch.tv for video streaming as well this week, and I kept screwing it up in the spelling going back and forth. So TWICH at twit.tv. And of course, if you want to share the show, send everybody to twit.tv/twitch. And you can find the ways to subscribe through iTunes or whatever your favorite podcast app happens to be these days.
You can also email us. We're not giving out our personal email addresses. Not today. But Twitter us, Ryan Shrout, at Ryan Shrout, at Patrick Norton. Apparently, I'm just going to quit before the baby tiredness.
We can absolutely do that.
Kills us all. Oh, my goodness. PCPer.com is Ryan Shrout's website. Techzilla.com is mine. TEKZILLOPCPER.com. And that's it for this edition of Twitch. I'm Patrick Norton.
I'm Ryan Shrout.
We'll see you next week.
I see you have a new tape on the back of the laptop?
It is new tape. I got my freshly repaired MacBook Air back. Yeah. Okay. So I actually have a screen that has pixels on it, not giant dark sections of pain and cracked LCD suffering.
I'm using one of these new Lenovo X1 Carbons.
I had my grubby little paws on one of those yesterday, and I was talking to Francois from Intel. Oh, I should have told everybody about the Intel performance interview we talked about on Techzilla. But yeah, I basically said to him, I bet Ryan Shrout's going to buy one of these.
Oh, you know what? We had that conversation when I was at IDF, Francois and I. And I tell you what, I really like it. The R key pops up, like the R key is broken. Like if you hit the left-hand side of it, the right-hand side of it flips up. Like there's a little, and I took the key off and there's a little piece of plastic that's broken off of the scissor, is it a scissor key?
Is this a loaner?
It is. It's a review sample.
So they sent you a broken review sample, or you broke the review sample?
I might have broken it, but I was only typing. It's not like I was hitting it with a hammer.
You claim.
So I claim, yeah. That's true.
I've heard that before.
I have to buy a new notebook. I need a new notebook, and I was deciding between this Lenovo X1 Carbon, Samsung Series 9, which is
really nice,
sexy looking laptop, yeah. And then going back to old reliable, the Lenovo X230, which is a 12.5-inch screen, but it has a 9-cell battery, and I can get a 6-cell slice, which gets you like 20 hours of battery life. It's not cool. It's not cool looking. It's not sexy. And it looks like the same laptop I've had for the last 5 years because I've had X201s. But damn it, they just work. You know? And I don't know. I'm trying to see if the battery life of the X1 Carbon actually kind of feels like it's enough. I don't know. That's the problem with these Ultrabooks is that they're so small, so skinny, that they just don't have room for giant batteries like I like.
It's good to have computers that work.
Well, they're claiming like 8 hours of battery life off of that now, which is a big improvement.
Total bull crap.
Tell us how you really feel.
I bet I can get 5 hours out of it. And I'm not doing, like, I'm browsing the internet. Like, that's what I do. I use Gmail and I use Gmail, essentially, is all I do, right? And the website administration is a website. So I'm not doing anything super high powered here. It feels like it lasts a 5 hour window, you know, and it's nice, but my X201 is down to about 4 hours of battery life just because the battery's getting old and all that kind of stuff. But it reboots and it has all kinds of other issues. That's why I want another machine. I keep telling myself, you know what? I deserve it. I want a cool-looking, sexy laptop now. I've had this X201 that is it's small. It's not super thin, but it's a business machine. Like, if you pull that out, it's like, well, you know, Ryan, you're not in it for the style.
If you're going to be a hipster, you have to get a Mac.
Yeah, but I'm not a hipster. That's not the issue. I don't know. I want this laptop with actually 8 hours of battery life.
Do they have a slice that'll like double the thickness and give you the battery life you want?
Well, they don't have like there's no port on the bottom of it. Right. I mean, it's not a removable battery, even, you know, that kind of stuff.
Chuck it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's really nice. The broken key makes me worry about like the long term viability of it.
But you probably didn't get it new though. It's probably not. You're not the first person to get it.
I am not the first person to have it. Our laptop reviewer Matt had it
from your other.
Yeah, and if I bought a new one and it got a broken key, I know there's a warranty and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know.
I'm Patrick Norton, and this is the show where we try to tell you the most important news and tell you what hardware to buy and what hardware you might want to avoid. Ryan, look at the pain on Ryan's face. He's like, quick, before the internet falls down again.
Yeah, it could happen at any moment.